Welcome to the Modern Federalist. Your compass in the world of politics, policy, and people. We're here to challenge norms, question narratives, and offer balanced insight on pressing issues. Your host, Charlton Allen, is a seasoned analyst and a staunch advocate for freedom. With his sharp intellect, he'll guide you through the maze of contemporary politics. Whether you're a political enthusiast or just a curious observer, you've found your haven. This is the Modern Federalist. Welcome to the revolution.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Episode 7 of The Modern Federalist. I'm your host, Charlton Allen, bringing you the latest in thought and discussion. Buckle up, because we've got a jam-packed agenda once again today. First up, we're diving into the recent controversy surrounding the tragic case of Laken Riley. A mispronunciation of her name at the State of the Union address sparked a nationwide conversation. Well, to set President Biden's linguistic slip-up and his subsequent apology for using the term illegal. Next, we turn our attention southward. The director of the FBI has sounded the alarm on our border situation. Drug cartels, gangs, and violent criminals are flooding into the country through what is, in many places, a border in name only. When the nation's top law enforcement officer is raising the red flag, it's time to admit we're dealing with a full-blown crisis. Then we'll revisit a topic from a previous episode. I'll be sitting down with Sharice Trump from Speech First to discuss her organization's complaint against the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And finally, we'll take a trip to the Mile High City. Denver, a self-proclaimed sanctuary city, has been closing illegal migrant shelters. But wait until you hear what they did next. It seems hypocrisy has found a cozy shelter in Denver, Colorado. So grab your coffee or other beverage of choice, sit back, and let's roll. This is the Modern Federalist, where we don't just talk about the issues, we examine them. In this segment, I want to jump into a topic that has been at the forefront of national discourse, a topic that has stirred emotions and sparked debates across the country. I'm talking about the tragic case of Laken Riley, a young woman whose life was brutally cut short. Laken was a 22-year-old nursing student who was abducted and killed while jogging at the University of Georgia. The suspect, Jose Antonio Ibarra, a Venezuelan who had entered the United States illegally, was arrested and charged with her murder. This atrocity has raised serious questions about our immigration policies and border security. In his recent State of the Union address, President Biden made a woeful error. He mispronounced Laken's name, a mistake many found offensive, especially when one considers that he has not spoken with her family, much less apologized for her slaying and the failed policies that allowed her killer to enter the United States in the first place. It's worth noting that Biden was prepared with a button bearing Laken's name, yet he has not reached out to her grieving family. Mr. Biden, Laken Riley is not a stage prop. She was a vibrant young woman whose life was tragically cut short. Indeed, the details of Laken Riley's murder are horrifying and deeply disturbing. Her skull was deformed by her assailant, a testament to the brutality of her murder. This was not just a crime. It was an atrocity, a heinous act of violence that has left a family grieving and a nation in shock. And let's call it what it is. This atrocity was committed by an illegal alien. Saying this is not about bigotry or xenophobia. It's about the rule of law and the safety of our citizens. When we fail to enforce our immigration laws, when we fail to secure our borders, we leave our citizens vulnerable to such atrocities. Interestingly, Biden has apologized for calling Ibarra illegal, yet he hasn't apologized to the Riley family or the nation for his failed policies that led to this senseless act. His priorities here seem askew. We need to not only say Laken's name, we need to confront the fact that Mr. Ibarra was illegal. When we are seemingly more worried about words such as illegal than the actual crimes committed here, it says a lot about the state of our society. We need to remember Laken Riley. We need to say her name, remember her life, and acknowledge the preventable tragedy of her death. But we also need to do more than that. We need to demand better from our government and our leaders. We need to insist on the enforcement of our laws and the security of our borders. The American people deserve better than this. They deserve a government that prioritizes their safety and upholds the rule of law. And they deserve to know that tragedies like the one that befell Laken Riley are not just acknowledged, but are actually prevented. Let's continue to seek justice for Laken Riley and work together towards a safer, more secure America. As an additional note on the topic of our country's borders, I want to discuss a matter of national security that should transcend political lines and demands our immediate attention. The leader of our nation's chief law enforcement agency, the FBI, testified today that criminal gangs, drug cartels, and terrorists are exploiting our nation's borders. These dangerous elements are entering the United States largely unchecked and then disappearing into parts unknown. This should not be a political issue. This is a national security threat of enormous proportions. It's a clear and present danger that we cannot afford to ignore. The Biden administration needs to pay heed and acknowledge its mistakes. It's time to face the reality that our current immigration policies and the concept of sanctuary cities have serious implications for our nation's security. Sanctuary cities, which limit their cooperation with federal immigration enforcement, must recognize their error. These cities, including Chicago, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., New York City, and San Jose, need to understand that by defying federal law, they are potentially harboring those who wish to harm our nation. And in an election year, it's hard to imagine. Politicians will stop politicizing this issue for their own advantage. But that is precisely what the welfare of our nation and its citizenry demands. We need leaders who will put the safety of our citizens above political gain, leaders who will enforce our laws and secure our borders. Once again, the American people deserve better than this. They deserve a government that prioritizes their safety and upholds the rule of law. And they deserve to know that their government is doing everything in its power to prevent threats to our national security.
From sea to shining sea, this is the Modern Federalist Podcast, hosted by Charlton Allen.
Buckle up and get excited, as today we have a very special guest, the dynamic and inspiring Ms. Charisse Trump, the executive director of Speech First. Faithful listeners will recall that we delved into Speech First's complaint against the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill way back in episode 3. But today we have the privilege to hear directly from the source. Charisse is not just an advocate, but a formidable force in protecting the rights of students in higher education. With vast experience from the Heritage Foundation to the Alexander Hamilton Society. As a prolific commentator whose views and insights have been featured across a spectrum of platforms, from the Wall Street Journal to Fox News to the National Review, she's a beacon in the mission of free speech in America. In this episode, we will unfold layers of knowledge and perspective with Charisse on the state of free speech, specifically her insight on Speech First complaint against UNC. Grab a warm cup of Joe, or tea, we don't judge, or a Coke Zero, preferably not warm, and get ready for thought-provoking dialogue right from the heart of the matter. So lean back, tune in, and let's jump into our enlightening conversation. You won't want to miss out on this one. Thank you for joining us today, Charisse.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Could you tell us a little bit about your organization, what it stands for, and your role in it?
Absolutely. So I'm the executive director, and we're a nonprofit membership organization that represents, as you mentioned, students, our student members, in the court of law when their campuses violate their free speech rights. We also educate students on their legal rights and try to advocate on their behalf with regards to, you know, state policies and whatnot. And ultimately, when students come to us, we're talking about policies that specifically chill their speech through censorship and coercion, but also, you know, anything that, you know, they come to us with various policies or issues as well that are incidents that take place on campus for us to take part in.
And can you provide more details about the recent incident involving my alma mater, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and issue with the Students for Justice in Palestine that I believe occurred in January of this year?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's an interesting incident because, well, first off, it was meant to be actually an objectivity in journalism incident, event that Barry Weiss was invited to speak. And Barry Weiss is a very well-known journalist who used to work for The New York Times and left because of the clear bias and coercion that was taking place there. And when she went to go star the Free Press, she had become very popular as, a free speech advocate, but then also someone who advocates for objectivity in journalism. And so ultimately, she was invited to UNC Chapel Hill campus to speak for their Abby Speaker Series, which is a discussion that, they always invite big name speakers for these events. And she was invited, actually, I think it's important to note here, she was invited of September of 2023. Okay, so the event took place in January of 2024. So it was long before anything happened with regards to the Israel-Palestine conflict on October 7th, the terrorist attacks there. And so she was already invited to speak on something completely different. But of course, she's Jewish and she's an active, she's very outspoken on the Israel-Palestine conflict. So come January, there was a big push by the Students for Justice in Palestine chapter at UNC to protest this event when Barry Weiss they characterize it as a walkout on their social media accounts, but ultimately we're pretty sure they conspired to actually shout down Barry Weiss. And the interesting thing about this, which is what we note in our complaint, is that North Carolina, as well as UNC, because they're a public school in North Carolina, North Carolina actually has a lot of very strong free speech protections in their laws when it comes to campus speech. And that includes at speaker events. Shouting down and disrupting events is actually in violation of those laws and the campus policies, in that it actually disrupts and stops someone from speaking. And so we're simply asking that the university enforce these policies. And I would note that enforcement doesn't mean just stating that the policy exists and then kicking out the students, which is ultimately what happened. What it actually means is holding them accountable to the policy and to the law and doing what the policy says, which is enacting disciplinary sanctions. And then even further, we call that they investigate the SJP chapter to determine if they did conspire to shout down the event and therefore violate campus policy and violate state law. And then, remove their club status if that's ultimately what the conclusion is. And I think that right now we can talk more about this, but I think accountability is necessary more than ever, because we're seeing shoutdowns become par for the course. This is norm now, and this is not something that we should be normalizing. You do not have, when we talk about the right to free speech, it's not the right to silence other people. That's not the same thing. Those are two different concepts. And so it's important that students understand the differences and that North Carolina enforces its policies.
That's a very good point, that you cannot characterize actions to shout down others and silence speech as free speech.
Right. That would defeat the purpose.
Exactly. And one of the things I have seen that's been a current theme, a continuing theme, in those who have tried to defend the actions here of Students for Justice of Palestine, or SJP, is that they were merely walking out. They were not disrupting. Sounds like that is not correct.
No, it's absolutely not. First of all, let's talk about the nefarious goals of a walkout. I mean, this is obviously in and itself already disrupts the event, but we can debate that. We can debate that another time, because there was clear other violations here. But a walkout is the goal there is to take up as many seats as possible in an event by getting all of your supporters present, and then to walk out and leave the auditorium half empty. So that means that you have not only left the auditorium half empty, but it means that you've also prevented your fellow students, your peers, from having access to the event because you took the rest of the tickets. So this is, there's already a really, when we're talking about disruption, that already in and itself is a disruption. And that's, disrupt is the word that the law and the policy specifically use. And so there's that aspect, but they didn't just do that. They waited about 25 minutes into the event and they stood up, and for 3 minutes, they shouted. They shouted at her, they prevented her from speaking, they interrupted the event. And I don't know if you've ever been to one of these types of events where you're sitting and then a protest happens. I've been to a number of them, and I can tell you from experience that after that happens, I mean, this is why the policy exists. After that happens, no one's paying attention to the ban anymore. Everyone's on social media. Everyone's reporting everything. People are all disturbed and worked up. And no one really, it kind of completely derails the event, which is the ultimate goal, right? That's what they want. They want to stop the event from happening, ultimately. So I think it's important to recognize what the actual goals and intents are here and why that law exists, why that policy exists. It's because we all know what they're trying to do and we all know what actually happens at the events. So they did shout down the speaker. And you know, there was an administrator that stood up and said, you know, there's a North Carolina state law and a policy on our campus, you know, that say that you're not allowed to disrupt these events, so you have to leave. But let's remind ourselves, their goal was to walk out anyway. So telling them to leave ultimately just satisfies their goal. They still got to leave the auditorium half empty. There was like 45 of them, by the way. So they took up a huge chunk of the auditorium. And no one talks about the planning that led up to this event. They had a lot of the administrators in the campus, they actually downsized the venue because of they knew there was going to be some sort of protest. They increased security. They prevented students from buying tickets in advance because they knew the SJP chapter was trying to get as many tickets as possible. And so this already increased the barrier to entry for other students, for their peers. They need to be held accountable. And I don't think this is, when we're just talking about the spirit of the university and what the event was supposed to be, I think the administration has every right to question what SJP was trying to do here and to investigate them and ultimately hold them accountable.
It raises some serious issues about their specific conduct there, but it also, in my view, has a chilling effect on other student groups, other yes. organizations, and holding events that may have a component that a far left group or a far right group, for that matter, may want to disrupt.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Again, this was all planned in advance. This was, they did conspire to disrupt this event. So they had a good amount of time to know whether or not it was against policies. The university had a good amount of time to inform them that this was against the law. And I assume, everyone's adults here. So they violated policy, they violated state law, and they just need to be held accountable. And I would go and say that, they also wore masks specifically to hide their identity so that they couldn't face disciplinary sanctions. And I think that's important to note that North Carolina, I know that they had a policy. I'm not sure if it's still active against masking during protests, but it is a public campus. So that would be something that, folks should look into, the university should look into. But ultimately, I think, even if you're not looking at the mask thing, we can still investigate the SJP chapter. You can still do that because they are the ones who organized it. And they're the ones then who conspired to break the law. So, I mean, look, a number of campuses across the country have punished clubs and chapters of organizations all over the country many times for violating campus policy. By disbanding them, by saying that you lose your club status, you lose that privilege if you're going to violate our campus policies. This should be a very straightforward situation. But for some reason, UNC is truly struggling here.
And how did Speech first become aware of this particular incident?
Yeah, well, it was, so we had some students on campus who leaked us the videos of after the event and let us know what was going on. And they were very deeply disturbed because, again, it derailed the event. And a lot of students, told us they couldn't even attend because they couldn't, because there was a limited number of seats that, again, these protesters took up. It's just, again, we represent our student members, but in the court of law, we also try to do it in the court of public opinion. And that's part of the reason why, we went, we're like, look, this is unacceptable. We filed the complaint and then they acknowledged they received the complaint, but nothing's been done. So I would just, we would just like to hold them to their own standard. Look, North Carolina, especially UNC in this situation, they already have these policies and laws in place that are really great, strong speech protections. They have an opportunity here to step up and set the example nationwide and say, no, we're not going to tolerate this behavior. And we already have the policies in place to enforce it. I think this happened not too long ago. I want to say 2022, there was another protest. I think some students had told us about. And it was a very similar situation. Again, the protesters shouting down. By the way, the North Carolina law was passed in 2017, so it's been around for a while. And even in that situation, it wasn't enforced. The students never saw disciplinary sanctions. So again, it's going to keep happening unless someone steps up and says that this should not be the norm. This should not be what we have to experience every single time we want to host a speaker on campus that you just don't happen to like. And again, it defies the spirit of what the university is supposed to be about, which is hearing ideas that maybe make you a little uncomfortable that you're not familiar with, and then being able to debate those and challenge those ideas in a really mature and academic manner.
And I believe the UNC policy is UNC policy 1300.8 in the Campus Free Speech Act, which is North Carolina law. And you've already covered some of this territory about what their particular actions and conduct were that violated this particular policy and the state law. But I wanted to dive a little deeper into what exactly were they chanting and what were they saying to be disruptive?
Well, you know, it's the Students for Justice for Palestine, so you can imagine what they were chanting. It was a number of anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, anti-Zionist rhetoric, and so it's the usual from the river to the sea. They were specifically targeting Barry Weiss because calling her a genocidal maniac and basically saying that she supports genocide. And so that's ultimately again, this is kind of par for the course for the SJP chapters. They also notoriously violate campus policies across the country. So this is why a number of states or universities have also, removed their club status. I think more recently, George Washington University removed their club status because they violated campus policy by harassing Jewish students. So they don't seem to have an issue with crossing that line. And I think it's time that the universities start pointing out that when you cross this line, there's going to be consequences. Again, what is the point of having a policy if you're not going to enforce it? By just simply stating it exists, it's clearly not deterring future behavior.
That's exactly right. And just because it's par for the course, that does not make it right. And that does not remove it from the characterization that it is harassing to other students.
And it's important to note, too, that a lot of these students, we talked about this at the beginning, but they genuinely believe that they are exercising their free speech rights when they're trying to silence other people. We had a number of students, and when we launched this campaign, to ask UNC to enforce its policies, we have a number of students that have reached out to us and others reach out to us and say, oh, they were just exercising their free speech rights. Barry Weiss should have just shouted louder than them. She should have just had a megaphone and spoke over them. I'm like, do you really expect the United States to operate that way? Do you really think that that's what the First Amendment was designed for, so that people would just try to shout over each other forever? That's obviously not what it's for. And you can't, we already have a number of laws in place it's pretty self-explanatory when you're thinking about one. You cannot remove the rights of others by saying that you're exercising your rights. So we stated that earlier, the right to free speech does not include the right to silence people and to censor them with your own speech. That's taking, by saying that you're exercising your free speech rights by shouting over someone means you're taking it so literally. It reminds me a little bit of like Amelia Bedelia or something, those books where she's like, she takes something so literally that it actually becomes ridiculous. And it has a lot to do with the fact that this just isn't taught anymore in school. These kids come to campus with like no civics education. They never talk about the Constitution in school anymore in K-12. And ultimately they come to campus and, for the most part, most of them probably have very little respect or understanding of the U.S. Constitution or laws and kind of our fundamental principles and, in American culture. And so when they think they're exercising their rights, they abuse them. They abuse others' rights. And then when they don't want to be held accountable, they say that the Constitution is racist or bigoted in some way, so they don't have to respect it or follow the law, which in both cases, again, very ridiculous, considering it is the law of the land and you do have to follow it no matter what you think of it. There's a number of issues here, but I think one of the main ones we should take away from this is ultimately that these kids don't really know anything about the Constitution. They don't know about the policies. They just don't know about the principles of free speech. And the onus is on universities because it's not getting done in K-12.
That's really a key point for me. It is a failure of the education system because the traditional school thought, very simplistically, was that your rights end where someone else's rights began. And that has completely been lost in our educational system. I want to ask in particular about the potential consequences for the SJP chapter at UNC. And you've kind of already touched on this, but one of those potential impacts would be if the university pursues this, that they would lose their standing as a student organization, which would mean that they would not be able to reserve meeting space and organize on campus. Is that correct?
Yeah. I'm not sure what the exact particulars are of what club status entails at UNC's campus, but it does usually, in most campuses, it usually means having access to student activity fees, so that you can use that to fund your events, to be able to reserve rooms, to be able to reserve spaces on campus. Now, granted, there are probably clubs, especially on public campuses, that can operate in certain areas on campus that are considered public space. But ultimately, yeah, it would make it difficult for them to hold events and also to, you know, organize various protests that they want to, events like that as well. Again, it comes down to, it's not about silencing the SJP chapter. It's about showing students on campus that there are consequences to attempting to silence others, that censorship and coercion are not okay. And that's about the American way. And that's not how we debate each other. That's not how we handle situations that we don't agree with. We know it's just like, you don't act like children, don't throw tantrums. It seems like a very basic lesson. But, you know, when there's no deterrent, when there's no sign at all that the policy will ever be enforced, then they have no incentive to follow it. So that's ultimately what we're seeing here.
And what is the current status of the complaint that was filed by Speech First?
I would really like to know that as well. It was a couple weeks ago. We filed on January 31st, and they acknowledged that they received it. I have not heard back from the university. We will likely be sending a follow-up letter to the campus leadership. The person that we sent it to, who's supposed to be responsible, you know, every North Carolina public college has a designated individual on their campus that is responsible for enforcing these free speech policies. And that's the person that we initially sent this to at UNC Chapel Hill's campus. And that in this case, that's Jonathan Saul's Senior Associate Vice Chancellor of Student Success and Administration. And he's the person that's supposed to be, you know, designated to enforce these policies. But we might have to go over his head. We haven't heard anything back. So I would really be interested in what the university is planning to do. I'd be interested to know if they are, but, you know, look, we're not going to keep pushing them if they're already doing something about it. I'd be really interested to know if they are investigating the SJP chapter for conspiring to violate state law and campus policy. Again, these are very serious things that they're just letting students get away with on a regular basis. And if we ultimately want to change, and what I think UNC really does, I mean, we saw that they have the new civics center or civics school that recently launched on campus. I think they ultimately do want to shift how students and faculty and administrators operate when it comes to basic core principles of the United States. And we want to support things like free speech and open discourse. Then we have to investigate groups like this who are blatantly violating those policies and just kind of walking all over those principles.
I agree. And it seems to me it would be a pretty simple response, at least at this stage, for the UNC administration to say, we are investigating this matter further and we'll keep you posted. Well, thank you, Charisse, for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
As we draw closer to the end of this enlightening segment with the indomitable Ms. Charisse Trump, there is an echoing silence that beckons our attention. That is the silence of the University of North Carolina on the complaint lodged by Speech First, which raises questions that cannot be overlooked. The persistence and resilience shown by Speech First as it took the matter to the UNC Board of Trustees demand commendation. As proud citizens of the Republic, we must always remember that our Constitution memorializes rights and valuable rights of expression and association that are bestowed and endowed upon us by our Creator. These aren't just rights, but they're vital building blocks of our republic, fostering free thought and open dialogue. But remember, with every right comes responsibility. The freedom to express your views does not extend to disruptive actions that infringe upon another person's right to speak freely and associate peacefully. As the old adage goes, your liberty to swing your fist ends just where my nose begins. Bringing this into the context of freedom of speech, nobody possesses a heckler's veto to silence others. It's time for my alma mater, and indeed every other institution of higher learning, to summon the lion of accountability, confronting those who disregard and disrespect the rights of others simply because they disagree. In situations like these, the mettle of our institutions and our institutions' leadership is truly tested. It's high time we stood against the disruption of free speech and association. The future of our educational environment hangs on brave decisions like these. Let's all cherish these thoughts. Continue voicing your views, continue respecting others, and continue safeguarding the liberties of all.
The Modern Federalist, hosted by Charlton Allen, will return in a moment.
This segment, we're going to discuss a matter that has been making headlines in the city of Denver, a city that has proudly declared itself a sanctuary for illegal immigrants. In a surprising turn of events, Denver's leadership under Mayor Mike Johnston announced the closure of four illegal immigrant shelters. This decision was made in an attempt to save around $60 million in the city's budget. It's a move that has left many scratching their heads, considering Denver's self-proclaimed status as a sanctuary city. What's even more astonishing is that following the closure of these shelters, the city turned to local landlords, asking them to house the displaced migrants. And they're doing this without offering any significant compensation. This situation raises several questions. How can a city that holds itself out as a sanctuary, a safe haven for illegal immigrants, turn around and close its shelters due to budget constraints? And then, how can it ask private citizens to shoulder the burden without offering adequate compensation? It's a clear demonstration of the disconnect between the city's policies and its actions. On one hand, Denver wants to be seen as a sanctuary city, virtue signaling that it is welcoming immigrants with open arms. But on the other hand, when it comes to the financial realities of maintaining that status, the city falls short. It's a clear demonstration of the complete disconnect between the city's policies and its actions. But this is not just about the city of Denver. It's about every city and every state that declares itself a sanctuary for illegal immigrants. It's about understanding the responsibilities that come with such a declaration and being prepared to meet them and not merely shove them off on someone else.
Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and share the Modern Federalist Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today on the Modern Federalist. I also would like to extend my sincere appreciation to Charisse Trump for joining us to speak about her organization, Speech First, complaint against the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. As we wrap up this episode, let's take a moment to reflect on the timeless words of Emma Lazarus, etched into the very heart of our nation at the Statue of Liberty. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. These iconic lines from the New Colossus have resonated across generations, symbolizing America's promise of refuge, hope, and opportunity. But let us not forget the full context of this powerful sonnet. For within its verses lies a deeper truth, one that transcends partisan narratives and calls us to uphold the rule of law. The New Colossus raises her torch beside the golden door, illuminating a path for those who seek a better life. But let us be clear, lawful immigration is not synonymous with illegal immigration. Our nation's sovereignty and security depend on maintaining a balance, a delicate equilibrium that respects our heritage as a land of immigrants while safeguarding our borders. In the spirit of Emma Lazarus, we must recognize that the light remains by the golden door, but it does not grant a free pass to circumvent our laws and the door itself. We are a nation built on principles, guided by a constitution that enshrines justice, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that pursuit begins with adherence to the law. So, my fellow citizens, let us reclaim our commitment to lawful immigration. Let us secure our borders, protect our sovereignty, and ensure the safety of our communities. It is not a matter of left or right. It is a matter of duty to our nation, our heritage, and our citizens. As we conclude today's episode, remember that the torch of freedom burns brightest when we honor both compassion and order. Let us stand united, firm in our resolve, and work towards a future where the golden door remains open, but only to those who enter through the proper channels. Thank you for tuning in to The Modern Federalist. Until next time, I'm Charlton Allen, encouraging you to stay informed, stay engaged, and may the light of liberty guide us all.
Thanks for tuning in to The Modern Federalist. Don't forget to subscribe for more thought-provoking episodes. Until next time.